Okay. Hi. Anybody who's in here? My name is Ethan. This is Tyler. And this is Rich. And this is This is Rich. We are Hyo Silver Away. This is Steve back there. We're just gonna play five songs, and we're gonna do this kind of weird mix thing with Steve. So if it works, it's gonna be really interesting. But if it doesn't, it's not. Steve is reading from Belong, original short story, and we're playing stupid songs. So, all right, Rebecca was really good, and so was Rob. So that was really cool. It's nice. Things are fun. Okay, so you'll kind of catch how we're gonna do this as we do it. I can still remember how the trees looked. Rolling past a window on the way out of town. And I felt nothing but relief. 100 degrees with the windows down. And you said, I know exactly what you're going through. Living in that house has started to take its toll on you. But if you really want to know the truth, accountability was never these people's strong suit in you. You can draw from what you know. Truth is, I don't know a thing. I'm just as exhausted. Stretch out far beyond my knees. I believe that I was stronger, but that's just not how things seem to be. Telephone. A long pause and a plea to come home. So much for my great escape. Some people always get their way.
Young man and a young woman around my age. lounging casually, but not intimately, on one of the couches near the fireplace. They notice me arrive and invite me to come sit with them. I accept and go to shake their hands before sitting down on the couch across from them. The woman introduces herself as Maria, with a Y, and she demonstrates how to pronounce her name, Maria, and the difference between pronouncing her name and Maria without a Y, and I tell her I get the difference even though I don't. She's plain-featured and thin and crackles with a nervous energy. Her hair is like a frayed wired brush, which she's tried to braid but failed. The man, Jeff, is short with olive skin and dark hair covering his fingers, his arms, and his short, shorn head and face. He seems to be Maria's closest friend and confidant, and he nods approvingly when she tells me that he's currently in the midst of a killing spree which, when it's all said and done, has the chance of becoming the second greatest ever, behind only that of Lucille Tartakovsky, whose name she speaks with lustful admiration. I want to tell her I'm sure she has it in her to overtake him for the top spot, but I don't want to risk offending her. The difference between a serial killer and a person on a killing spree, she explains to me, is all the difference in the world. Methodology, premeditation, and motive are all totally different. Jeff interjects, I'm shocked, more by the fact that he's actually speaking than the content of what he's saying. She's no Jack the Ripper, you know? Stalking down prostitutes and slicing them into pieces? No way. Maria just flips her shit every once in a while and kills them with, you know, whatever's convenient, available. Huh, I say, that's so interesting. I found a new place to stay the next night. Chapter 2. A little bit about myself. My name is Roger, and people call me Raj, which is maybe not interesting at all. I'm searching for something, and I have been for about 7 months, although I don't know what it is. I used to think that I'd know when I found it, but now I'm not so sure. I won 12th place in a science fair when I was in middle school. I had tried to build a farting robot, but all the teachers thought it was a cocktail shaker. My zodiacal signs are Ox and Capricorn, and I have no idea what either of them means. I get angry at people who quote movies and TV shows instead of actually talking, and I'm terrified of most trees. Not oak trees, though. Oak trees are okay. Both my parents died when I was 9. They used to volunteer for Amnesty International and got blown up by a landmine in Bosnia while arguing about the fastest way to a nearby bar where each of them might be able to have sex with people who were not each other. My journey began in earnest at a rest stop near Sedona, Arizona. I was on my way back to Chicago to see a witch doctor near Prescott who was supposed to cure me of my seasonal affective disorder, but didn't. From out of the sunset at the rest stop, a tall man with white hair tucked under a dirty baseball cap and weathered pockmarks gouged into his cheeks and nose walked up to me. He asked me if I knew where the bathroom was, and I pointed him towards it. 45 minutes later, after the sun had gone down completely and I'd forgotten him entirely, he reappeared, thanking me, telling me that this was his first dump in 3 weeks, as he'd stopped eating food and instead just drank Pepsi with sugar packets added, 3 to 6 packets per 12-ounce can. He then tried to shake my hand, and I nearly kicked him in my refusal. He sat down next to me and shared with me his life story, how he just escaped from a traveling carnival whose owner had stiffed him on 3 weeks' pay. I told him thank you and walked away back to my car, started the engine, and realized I was going the wrong way, but I couldn't tell anymore if there was a right way or why. Like, I almost got onto the freeway in the wrong direction and didn't notice until I lifted my foot off the clutch and staring down oncoming traffic. I realized something was missing in my life, so I gave up on going back to Chicago, stopped in Flagstaff for a payphone and a shot and a beer, and pulled the rest of my parents' life insurance money out of the bank. The next day, I began searching. I'm in Butte now. It's very cold. I found another peculiarly shaped rock this afternoon, one that was a dead ringer for the Sydney Opera House, but I've stopped receiving inspiration or guidance from such things. Chapter 3. You have to understand, I found a lot of rocks.
Holes in the wall from where the telephone was thrown. Kids in their bedrooms learning how to cope. There's beer in the fridge and vomit in the sink. No one ever said this is how life would be. Not by your bed, watching you sleep. Feeling ashamed, brought you into this mess. And I'd leave if I didn't think that you'd resent me. It wasn't me that I thought you'd end up blaming. If I wasn't worried about the person that you'd become, if I had the guts to start over with you, I swear I'd die. It's not for me to decide what you got coming, but I sure as hell hope that it's swift. The truth is that it's more than likely you'll get away with every rotten thing you did. And judging by the actions that you've taken, you got some nerve talking about manipulation. But sometimes I feel like I still have the strength back every decision I was ever forced to make. I could go back to when I was young if I had the guts to start over with you. I swear I'd run. Your mother's asleep in the next room. 4 a.m. on a Saturday. In between sipping tea that you've been through. And I thought about how always amazed me. How lighthearted we could be about our views.
Let's
lives. In Chicago, we squatted in an abandoned warehouse together with 15 to 21 other people. Dirty, dilapidated, and totally punk rock. It wasn't my style at all, but then again, I was just along for the ride. The L train passed along right outside our south wall 5 times an hour, and when we were drunk or just mischievous, we'd screw right there in the window. He'd hold me in the crook of his armpit, lips buried in my hair, and he'd breathe so softly, like the slightest motion would wake me up. Hey, could you please get in?
Yes.
So I'd pretend to be asleep. I'd flutter my eyes adorably when the L next stormed through and shook our bookshelves, its passengers first seeing the banner on the sill reading, "These faggots kill fascists," then Eric's naked ass, him kissing my brow, pulling me a little closer, protecting me from the day. I guess you could say I've mellowed out a bit since then, but really that was never me. Bashing back is fun and all, but I guess I'd just rather my sexuality remain none of your business until we're balls deep. I mean, maybe, I guess. A statement like that gives the impression that I've actually been balls deep since Eric. I suppose it's much easier to make it none of your business when there's nobody else's business who I actually want. Chapter 5. Roughly a week ago, a car broke down halfway between Barstow and Needles, California, and I caught a tow back to a transmission shop in Barstow. The car would be ready in the morning. I spent the night in the bar on the corner next to an ongoing and spirited argument between a pianist with 7 fingers on each hand and his friend, who was, as far as I could tell, the heavy metal guitarist called Buckethead. I mean, it could have been some other guy with a guitar and a KFC bucket on his head. I don't know. The bar had almost as many dartboards as patrons, and only kept one brand of each variety of liquor behind the counter. One whiskey, one vodka, one rum, and so on. All 7 of the patrons, scattered across all corners of the bar, at tables, throwing darts, seemed like regulars, like they belonged exactly where they were. If you were to take one of these people out of the bar, I decided, their body would melt away into a pinkish sludge with a couple eyeballs floating on top, and it would slither amorphously back inside and reconstitute itself in one of the booths. I closed my eyes and imagined myself as one of these people. I would wake up every morning in my house or apartment and take a shower. I'd brush my teeth and eat breakfast and then go to my job and not care if I hated it or if the company had terrible politics. I would get along with my neighbors and my coworkers in an honest and meaningful way, whether I had anything in common with them or not. And every day at quitting time, I'd walk over to this bar and stay all evening on 2 drinks, telling the same stories and having the same arguments night after night. I wouldn't use the internet or watch TV, and I wouldn't talk to anyone who did either. I'd never have to think about or react to anything difficult or unexpected ever again. What's the story, kid? I started answering bartender's conversation before I realized I was telling the truth. I'm looking for a way to never have to think about or react to anything difficult or unexpected ever again, I said. He raised an eyebrow. So, double whiskey then. I guess that's a start, I said, reaching for my wallet. I mean, like, forever, though. You don't live forever, kid, just until you die. I pretended to be impressed by the bartender's infinite wisdom. So my choices are bliss and death then, yeah? Careful, kid, he said. You sound like my cousin's friend's daughter. She was reading one of them books that kept her telling her how fucked up she was. Then all the books have all the answers. It was one of them, what do you call them, self-help books. She got obsessed and tracked down the author and ended up joining some kind of cult. The pianist stood up and walked over to the piano in the corner. He played an improvised tune with 14-note chords and wildly disjointed arpeggios, and the artist who might be Buckethead reached a toe down from his bar stool to tap a couple effects pedals. His fingers hit the fretboard in a perfect replica of the pianist's polydactylic sonata. Nobody else in the bar seemed to notice or react. I was a bit preoccupied myself. A place to go where all your problems are simplified and everybody likes you. A cult sounded perfect. An hour or two later, after the drink was done and I'd read all about cults on Wikipedia on my phone, I went back to the bar and ordered another whiskey. This girl, I said, the one who joined the cult, you got me curious. Who is the author? Someone I've heard of? Man, hell if I know, he said, cleaning a glass, twirling it over and over with the rag inside. I mean, I remember they were up in Montana, where we used to live. Everybody had heard of the cult. No, intentional community, they called it, up near Butte. Well, halfway between Butte and Helena. Don't know if that's the kind of scene you want to check out, though. They don't hardly got any laws in Montana. Could drive your car with an open tall boy. A cop would just tell you to mind your upholstery. We stayed and talked for 4 or 5 more piano guitar duels, the conversation sometimes tangentially related to cults. Just as I was starting to lose myself in the story I was telling, the one time at the squat when I found the dead squirrel Eric left in the freezer, my throat suddenly voided itself of moisture. All of a sudden, it sunk in that I had already seen Eric for the last time. Anyway, thanks, I said. But I should probably go find a hotel room or something. I walked 5 blocks to the park and passed out behind a tree. My phone was gone when I woke up. Chapter 6. What happened the time I found the squirrel Eric left in the freezer? It was roadkill he had found and stuck there and forgot. I found it months later when I was cleaning out the fridge and screamed my little face off. The part of the story I didn't tell the bartender is when I tried to tell Mars, my squat mate, about it. I guess I said something wrong because she called me gay white hype under her breath and walked away. Eric saw me crying when he got home. He got all the usual questions again. Can't they see I'm trying? Who are they to blah, blah, blah? Of course he told me it was okay and rubbed my back because he was wonderful, but it seemed like it was harder for him this time than usual. Chapter 7. I could deal with Eric getting sick and dying. It was an eventually that I could prepare for and did prepare for every time he had a sore throat or a stuffy nose. I wasn't prepared, though, for having to prepare for it over and over and it never happening. For the panic on the 26th of the month when he's still $1,100 short away from being able to afford the next supply of a triplet, his HIV meds. It's been a year and I don't know if he's alive or dead. I hope I won't know until it's too late.
Wow. Okay, this is the equivalent of a two-song warning when you're doing a story battle set. We're gonna play one more and then Steve's gonna finish Belong. And after that is Danielle or Keith. One of the other. So I just want to say, sometimes people think I'm a big just jerk, and I don't know why. So I'm trying to be honest when I'm in this situation because I hate this. I don't like doing this. So talking, that is. So I just want to say that I'm all right. I'm an all right guy. And no, honestly, I feel really, really privileged to be doing this with these people who are all doing really, you know, because I'm a bumpkin, but I'm a stupid. I'm a stupid. All right. Okay, so like I said, this is the last one, and then Steve's gonna finish that. So give it up for everybody. Yeah. This is one for the books. It was countless dishonest handshakes, chicken shit, dirty looks, and if we could please. Just speak candidly, I think it'd be a change of pace to hear some honesty. And these kids don't appreciate a goddamn thing. They just take it and take an error sin. To notice the direction we're all heading, completely stuck in the in-between. These days, I live on paper, notes, lists, letters, how things could be better, and I can't sleep most nights, just stop thinking about the days compromised, and it's nights like these, help me forget, so much I hate this fucking town. Feel useless when I insist on something that everyone seems to miss. And I feel desperate in the back seat. Do me a favor and just keep driving, and we'll let the gas stations serve as reminders of our destinations. We'll work hard throughout the night. Yeah, we'll try to find ourselves so fucking hard. But if you want the truth, I've never had the like that.
Maria turned up the next day. It had been a long day wandering around town, hitting every coffee shop, laundromat, natural food store, and bus stop, places where I felt like vulnerable people congregate. I was looking for flyers with certain keywords like, are you feeling lost? You deserve happiness and experience intentional community. It turns out there are way more possible cults in Butte, probably everywhere, than I could have ever imagined. I developed a rating system that counted the number of teeth exposed by people smiling on the flyer. The winner might have cheated because they had a group photo of about 30 people, and every goddamn person was smiling so big I thought they were gonna cry. Sunshine Wellness Center for Whole People in Boulder, Montana. This must be the place. I found a payphone at the bus station and gave them a call. I was so excited. The skeptic voyeur in me, the tourist of spiritual oddities, was looking forward to sitting in quiet, ironic judgment. Another part of me felt like I was finally going home. I greet you, hello, said the voice over the phone. She sounded like one giant smiling tooth. This sounded right. Is this the Sunshine Wellness Center, I asked. Yes, the Sunshine Wellness Center for Whole People. How can I help you? I think, I stammered, it came out quickly. I think I want to join. Is that okay? Can I do that? A slight pause while she caught her breath to answer. I mean, please, I said. Yes, of course, she said. You know what? Where are you right now? I can have someone come pick you up. Wow, okay, I said. Well, I'm in Butte, and I have a car. Is that okay? Don't worry about it. We can take care of your car, she said. I'm so excited to meet you. What was your name again? Roger, I said. You just did the best thing you could ever do for yourself, Roger, she said. She was very convincing. You're going to get the help and friendship you need, okay? Okay. Chapter 9. Eric always let me know when I didn't understand something. We first met the day before Thanksgiving, a balmy 35 degrees outside. I stood in front of the Whole Foods on West Huron in my green heavy coat, unbuttoned, gesticulating with my HRC-supplied clipboard, that little sticker on the back, blue with a yellow equals sign, the unmistakable marker of a young romantic faggot. He sniffed me right out, told his friends, hey, I'll catch up with you later. They rolled their eyes and kept walking, back behind the store. Eric in his black jeans with the zippers he'd sewed into the ankles so they'd fit tighter, and patches where the seat had worn through, then worn through again. He patiently sat through my entire rap, returning my little smiles and laughing at my jokes, and when I asked him to please sign the petition, he said, honey, you have no fucking clue what you're talking about. He took his time with me. Marriage is a legal contract, not a romantic vow. Transfer of ownership from family to husband reinforces gender binaries. And why should he sign up for that? And as for your last point, he said, that the right to marry is a symbol for the acceptance of queer people and queerness into society, I say fuck that. Queerness is an inherently political act. I'd prefer it remain dangerous. I opened my mouth 3 or 4 times to respond, but never got more than a couple words in before reconsidering. Not so much whether he was right or not, but how much I wanted him to be right, especially compared to the catty faux hockey twinks back at the LGBT center back at school. Come on, he said. I have something I want to show you. He led me around behind the store where his friends had gone but had since left. Confused, horny, curious, I followed along. He fished a key out of his pants pocket and unlocked a giant steel cage, revealing the dumpsters inside. An employee walked by, gave a dirty look, didn't dare approach us. Eric gasped, look. By the time I was beside the dumpster, he had already vaulted in, was climbing over the bags of prepackaged entrees and produce towards his prize. I noticed it immediately, an apple pie, immaculately, encased in peat plastic stasis, and I swear to fucking God, a single ray of sunshine shining directly on it. He took out his pocket knife and cut a slice. I took off my coat and hung it on the steel enclosure surrounding us and unsteadily climbed in to join him. He took the first bite, I ate the second, and then he kissed me right there in the dumpster. I dropped my clipboard and never came back for it. Six weeks later, I dropped out of Northwestern and gone to live with him at the squat. I had no friends, no family, no other interests. It just made sense. And when I told him one day, months later, that I wanted to stop using condoms, I didn't care what happened, it was the same thing. You have no fucking clue what you're talking about. And that was the whole conversation. Chapter 10. After that, I started to feel like more and more of a stranger in my own house. Well, no, it wasn't my house, it was ours, which means it was theirs, even though nothing was anybody's or something. I spent the next couple days mostly staring at the wall. Our squat mates didn't say anything. I purposefully ignored anything Eric said. If I got bit by the bug, yeah, maybe it would kill me. But the struggle, the treatments, and the worrying, and the sick, and the dying, it would be something we could go through together. It seemed like such a no-brainer to me. I thought he was just too shy to suggest it himself. I really didn't have any fucking clue. I thought I knew him. He wasn't supposed to say no. He went out in the morning to walk some yuppie's dog for a couple bucks. I put my clothes on in a milk crate. I put my clothes in a milk crate with my mom's jewelry and a bag of green bulbous grapes someone stole from the supermarket. I stepped into my car and drove away. Chapter 11. I see Maria in the alley about an hour later. I gave the sunshine people the information on where to pick me up and hung up the phone, looked to my right, and she was sitting on top of somebody, talking, I think, to them. They weren't moving. The car from Sunshine picks me up soon enough, and somebody gets out and asks me for the keys to my car, and we drive away together. Nobody says much of anything yet. In the car, we passed over countryside, prairies, and mesas. The sky is so clear and so unbelievably big. At the top of a hill, I look around. The unbroken prairie pauses for highways intermittently dotted with cars and nothing else. Nothing changes for miles upon miles. The fatigue of the last few months on the road is finally catching up to me. I curl up against the door, but I don't sleep. I just stare across the edge of the sky. I think I can peek around the curve of the earth. I think I'm ready now to disappear entirely.